What does the future of the U.S. Postal Service look like?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. There is a big conference going on at this very moment in suburban Washington, D.C. to look at the future of the U.S. Postal Service and whether, given the changes in the way we communicate these days, there's even a need for such an agency. Now, snail mail has competition, of course, from electronic mail and from UPS and FedEx, too, and that's put the post office in peril. Sally Herships reports.
Phil Herr keeps tabs on the Postal Service's financial conditions for the Government Accountability Office, and he sums things up this way.
There's less, quote-unquote, money in the mail.
More and more people are paying bills online, and with the recession, advertisers are sending fewer mailers. But it's hard for the Postal Service to lower costs. There may be less mail, but it still has to be delivered.
It's very costly to go to 131 million addresses 6 days a week.
So industry leaders are holding a conference, Postal Vision 2020, to brainstorm the service's future.
Clearly, it's going to have to do something different because it won't be delivering mail the way it is today in 10 years.
John Callen is managing director of industry consultant Ursa Major, the company running the conference. Google's vice president Vint Cerf is giving the keynote speech, and startups like online bill pay service Manila will also be there. With all this Silicon Valley presence, you might wonder if hungry tech companies have designs on the mail business. But John Callen says no. They're really there to help the Postal Service find a new approach.
These kind of companies think differently, and they think about open platforms, collaboration, and they encourage teamwork.
And teamwork may be one solution. The GAO's Phil Herr says many postal services in Europe are working with the private sector. They're moving into grocery stores and pharmacies and closing expensive standalone post offices. In the meantime, the U.S. Postal Service says it expects to lose over $8 billion this year. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
By the way, there is no mail today for most of Canada because of a strike and lockout north of the border. A new quarterly report out today shows some big changes in how people along the West Coast live, namely a shift in California, where fewer people are buying big houses in the suburbs and instead they're renting in cities for much longer. The UCLA Anderson forecast was just released a few moments ago, and Jerry Nicholsberg is one of the authors of that report. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Your study says there will be more urban apartments being built in fewer single-family homes. Why are people choosing to rent rather than buy?
For two reasons. One is in the housing bust, you had a lot of people who lost their homes, and so they're going to rent. And if you're going to rent, typically you rent closer to work. The second reason is that there's a large cohort that's now moving into household formation that's in their 20s, and people in their 20s demand multifamily housing closer to work.
Now, I can see how more apartments and fewer homes would be bad for the housing market, say, but construction is construction, right?
Construction is not construction. It takes fewer workers to build a multifamily unit than it does a single-family unit. The other thing that's significant is that the multifamily housing will be closer to the major employment centers. That's closer to the coast. And the construction workers are living out in inland California where the big housing developments were being built in the last decade. So we've got a geographical shift here that does not bode well for recovery.
Is this economic trend, Jerry, where the rest of the nation is going as well?
We have seen the shift to multifamily housing for those two reasons in the rest of the nation as well. And so even though the coast may be growing rapidly, it's still a drag. You know, ultimately it resolves itself, but that's going to take some years.
Jerry Nicholsberg, senior economist at UCLA's Anderson Forecast. Jerry, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are lower right now, more than 1% for the NASDAQ and the S&P. The Dow off 123 points, pretty much how much it was up yesterday. Well, it's pretty much retreated back to below 12,000 at 11,952. U.S. industrial production was up by nearly 0.5% in May. The government said today consumer prices were up in May as well, 0.2%. Food, clothing, and car prices all rose last month, but by the slowest pace in 6 months.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, managing more than $2 trillion in assets and providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. Coverage of the economy is supported in part by the Schuman Center for Media and Democracy.
Next week, Tunisia's deposed president will be tried in absentia on embezzlement and drug smuggling charges. Now, there are lots of global examples of politicians lining their pockets at taxpayer expense. In Britain, some members of parliament were even jailed for claiming stipends they weren't entitled to. And in Tanzania, a similar scandal has some lawmakers wanting to give back what they say are their ill-gotten gains. The BBC's Louise Redvers reports.
Tanzania is one of Africa's poorest countries, where millions live on the breadline without access to running water or electricity. But despite these pressing needs, according to the main opposition party, 13% of the country's budget is spent on stipends for members of parliament. Zito Kabwe is deputy secretary of the main opposition Chadema party. He's launched a campaign to give up what is called his daily sitting allowance of $50, which he receives for attending meetings in parliament on top of his main salary. The money, he says, should be diverted to charity work and social funds instead.
Our country's very poor. More than a third of Tanzanians live below the poverty line. So the politicians have to show the way by cutting these expenses. They're very unnecessary. And direct the money to development work.
Kabwe's idea has sparked much debate in the Tanzanian parliament, although most lawmakers appear to support the motion. But this week, the clerk of the National Assembly told members that once they get the money into their personal accounts, they can spend it any way they wish, including on charity work. In South Africa, I'm the BBC's Louise Redfers for Marketplace.
Finally, bedbugs have hit the big time in the nuisance category. The tiny, itchy pests now have insurance policies working against them in New York. That's where hotel owners and landlords have been paying big bucks to get rid of the bugs and have suffered millions of dollars in business losses. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
22 million people use illegal drugs in this country every year, and that kind of demand inevitably produces a profitable supply.
I think that Mexicans get a bad rap, and while a lot of the stuff is coming across the border, it's our demand that's pushing it here, you know?
I'm Kai Rizdal, rethinking the economics of the war on drugs. Next time on Marketplace, it's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.